Depending on conditions in occupied North America, the Anglo Indian may or may not employ harsh language.
International news, thought and opinion from the people on the front lines of indigenous struggle. This is Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
Listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Set up and run by a Luton businessman, Tommy Robinson, the EDL has been remarkably successful in a very short time at getting people around the country to come out onto the streets to protest against what they see as a growing threat from Islam.
30 years ago in this town, there was 3,000 Muslims and one mosque. If you'd have said to people 30 years ago, in 30 years' time, there'll be 19 mosques, there'll be 30, 40, 50,000 Muslims, they'll be banning the emblem of St George in your school, they'll be opening a prayer centre in the Arndale Centre, they'll be attacking your troops when they're walking home, they'll have stalls set up promoting jihad and extremism every single week in the town. 30 years ago, people would have said, never, that's not going to happen in Luton. Well, it's happened. At the end of the day, Islamic demographics are terrifying. The birth rate and the statistics are terrifying.
So are you just racists?
I'm not racist at all. I completely hate racism. We've defeated Nazism, but yet we're allowing Islamism to flourish because it goes under a banner of religion.
But aren't you promoting hatred against them?
We don't do anything out of hate. We do it out of love. Love for Christianity, love for our culture, love for my kids' futures.
At the heart of this conflict is obviously fear. But is it fear of Islamic terrorism, another 9/11, or is it something else? Robinson says what his organisation fears is Sharia law.
Now, in 2003, the European Court of Human Rights outlawed Sharia law in Europe and said it's incompatible with Western democracy due to their views on homosexuals, their views on women, and their views on infidels. That's all of us. It's incompatible. It won't work. And all we're seeing now is a louder voice and a louder call for Sharia law and aspects of Sharia law to be implemented into the British legal system.
Social fabrics of this society, even the economic, political, are collapsing. And this is where people like myself come along and we present this alternative, which I believe is Islam.
That's exactly what the English Defence League fears, or maybe we should call it the Englishness Defence League.
Angry Indian Radio.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight.
Listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me, Negro. That's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for the smart of the region.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
It seemed like it was about to be swept under the rug. But my family and I, we prayed on it.
An emotional Kenneth Chamberlain Jr. standing up for his dead father, a 68-year-old former Marine who took fatal bullets from White Plains police in November.
All members of the Chamberlain family, please stand.
The family welcoming the opportunity to pursue justice through the support of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, including its famous congregant, actress Ruby Dee, and its outspoken pastor, the Reverend Calvin Butts.
We're not anti-police. We've said that over and over again. We just know that there are some in our police departments who deserve to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law for murder, which is what this is.
Kenneth Chamberlain Sr. was killed when police went to his apartment after his medical alert went off accidentally. The family says he told cops he was fine, but that the police busted in anyway.
When he asked, "Please leave me alone, I'm a 68-year-old man," the response from law enforcement was, "We don't give an F." And then they called him the N-word.
Having seen and heard tapes from the incident, the Chamberlains insist their loved one did nothing to provoke deadly force. Police claim he came at them with a hatchet.
At that moment, when he was shot, his hands were by his side.
Attorneys for the family say if the grand jury does not come up with criminal indictments, they will press for a full-fledged federal investigation into the case and into the practices of the White Plains Police Department.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio, Radio.
Internet Radio for Smarter Original.
Welcome along, welcome along. Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian. Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And you have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, and neo-fascist control. I wish you all welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. As always, shout out to the gods and earths and peace to the original family in this time of strife and struggle. We're here. We're trying to have a conversation, you and I. And, you know, we need to do that. We need to do that. You know, we're not talking to each other as much as we need to, because we are allowing the negative elements in our communities. And when I say that, there's everybody. But I'm not concerned, you know, at this particular point in time, at this juncture, with everybody. I'm concerned with the Native and African. I that's what I'm concerned with. I'm concerned with the people of the fourth world. I'm concerned with my own people for change. And, finally, the United Nations is actually starting to make some moves. You know, it would be nice if Obama went along with them. But, we're going to have to see, right? And, what I'm talking about here is the United Nations is actually going to look at what's happening in North America. Now, from what I understand, the study with the special rapporteur is going to be limited to the United States. So they're really cutting out all of, Canada, occupied Canada, all of occupied Mexico, right? All of that is left out. All of that is being left out. So, what's happening in Chiapas is not going to be involved. Gustafson Lake, that incident is not being, it's not going to be involved. Nunavut province is not going to be involved. The Aleuts. That's a good question, because does that fall under, Canadian, Russian, or United States provision? Which is it? Which white man claims ownership over that strip of island? See, I'm not even sure. Enlighten me, Angry Indian Radio at lavabit.com, because I'm really not sure. I don't think anybody's really sure. Huh? You know, I don't think anybody really knows what the hell. You know, when it comes to these land claims, if you want to look at the legal, you know, if you want to make the colonialist legal argument, you know, what the hell is with these land claims, right? You know, we all know who was here first. And we all know who will be here last because, you know, the way things are going. You know, I mean, if you listen to the white racists, you know, the white people are about to disappear. You have these low birth rates in Europe proper, right? Even though we never really know exactly where the borders of Europe are either. You know, I mean, ask any Turk or ask any Greek on a bad day if they're really accepted as Europeans. Think about that for a moment. If you're Turkish or Greek or from Cyprus or Maltese or what have you, are you European? Are you really accepted as a European? You know, what does that mean, Europe? You know, this homogenous Europe, you know, according to Cameron in the UK, according to Merkel, who really shouldn't have anything to say on this subject, you know, in Germany. I mean, Germany is actually much more multicultural than you might realize. But, you know, when that wall came down, all of those Nazis that were on the east just flooded over to the west. You know, that's real. That's real. And, you know, when you look at what's happening in Germany right now, you know, the resurgence of neo-Nazism, of fascism in Germany, in France. I mean, do you see how Marie Le Pen... You know, Jean-Marie Le Pen's offspring, what has happened over here? You know, Sarkozy. I mean, yeah, you know, let's talk some more. Let's interrogate this just a little bit more. You know, when they talk about when Sarkozy, of all people, went up to the French press and said, you know, multiculturalism has failed. You know, mimicking Merkel in Germany and Cameron in the UK. That multiculturalism has failed. Isn't he Hungarian? And where are the Hungarians originally from? They're from Asia, aren't they? Yeah, isn't that why you look a lot different than other Europeans? Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, so, you know, what is this pure white Europe that everybody's talking about? This pure white United States that everybody's talking about? You know, the election of Barack Obama really, you know... just freaked a hell of a lot of people out. I mean, there's been a steady conniption happening ever since this man, and we all know why he won, because Goldman Sachs and the military-industrial complex here wanted him to win. You know, you really think it was your nickels and dimes and dollars that really got him in office? Look at who paid for him. You know, as Mark Felt, you know, who we all know now is Deep Throat, told, what was it, Woodward or Bernstein, one of them, it was probably Woodward, down there in that, when they used to have their little secret meetings, he told them, follow the money. You follow the money, you learn everything you need to know. Follow the money. So, you know, when you follow the money with, the current president, you realize that everybody who invested in him is doing extremely goddamn well. And when you look at what's happening in Africa and in the Arab world, these same people are making a profit. They're making a profit. You know, just like here, you know, we talk about gulags in China, we talk about gulags in the former Soviet Union. There's a, you know, the largest gulag system in the world is right here in North America, you know, and it's spread. It's spread to the UK, it's spread to Australia, it's spread to New Zealand. You know, they're trying to do this everywhere, to privatize, legalize slavery, which is what it is. Because if you didn't have classes, and if you didn't have poverty, and if you didn't have vulture capitalism, you wouldn't have, you know, I mean, well, you'd have crimes of passion, yeah? You know, you'd have the occasional wanker who decides to, you know, go off the I don't want to say reservation, you know, but you go off the grid, you know, to not follow the mainstream. And then you will, you know, see, you know, like a very minuscule number of people. very small number of people who really have to be removed, to be physically removed from the rest of society. That for whatever reason, there's no restitution, there's no material restitution possible for what they've done. Forgiveness will never, you know. And everything I hear about, you know, how someone said this a few weeks ago, I heard, in, as usual, one of the coffee shops I frequent, on how savage the African is. And, you know, I decided not to engage, and I just listened. Because you have to understand something. You know, I look very fairly conservative. So, you know, when white folks say certain things, they're not conscious. You know, they just go ahead and they talk. And I let them. I let them. I let them. Yeah, and this particular individual, you know, chatting with two other people. It's talking about how, you know, after the Kony video, you know, how savage these African warlords are. And the... you know, the brutality and the violence against women and youth and so on. And, you know, I mean, all of that is legitimate. You know, it really bothered me how she, you know, it was all about the African, the African, the African, the African. Everything with her was the African, the African. These black people, those black people. And she mentioned Charles Taylor, and she went, you know, and she mentioned, you know, the ICC, and she went through the whole thing. And then she got onto Muslims, you know. Never once did she mention the French, the United States, Canada, you know, the UK, you know, Australia, New Zealand, you know, Belgium. You know, anyone who was involved in the Coalition of the Willing as having been involved in war crimes and crimes against humanity. Here we have United States Marines urinating on Afghan dead who may or may not have been the, you know, quote-unquote enemy. Because we don't know. Because just about everybody now is part of the grand terrorist conspiracy, right? You know, no matter how old you are, from or 3 day old to an elderly man or woman of 86 years, they're all part of the conspiracy, right? They're all part of the conspiracy to keep the capitalist West from getting what they believe is rightfully theirs, which is basically the oil. And now the stuff that keeps the cell phones and the iPads that are made in slave labor in China. You know, to keep all of that functioning, you know, to keep it operative, to keep it available, to be made, to be sold to you, because you're now put into positions where you have to use these things. You know, I mean, I've been told by some young folks that, you know, college graduates, you know, who are trying to find jobs, you know, you might be read at today, I believe it is, the official student debt in the lower 48. Is $1 trillion. $1 trillion. And here you have someone like Rick Santorum who says it's elitist to make the argument that everyone should receive higher education. And then you look at places like Cuba and places like Libya under Gaddafi that paid you to go to school because it made the country stronger for you to have an education. Right? You know, Cuba has a health program that's free. Why? Because, you know, when people are not sick, there's less of a strain on the system. The country is strong. At the drop of a dime, the country is strong. You see, Kennedy understood this. And those of you who are old enough know what I'm talking about. Because before Kennedy, there was no physical education in the American school system. That came about because of the Kennedy administration, because he looked at what the Russians and the Chinese were doing at the time. With their physical culture, well, that's what it was called in China. I'm not exactly sure what it was called under the Soviet system. But basically, it was a system of exercise, of calisthenics and breathing exercises. And they taught you about proper diet and what have you. And, you know, the idea was everyone is healthy. Everyone is a potential, you know, communist, I don't want to say soldier because that's not, you know, really what it was about, but the whole idea of the worker, someone who's a participant. Because, you know, believe it or not, and I know this is very, very hard to explain to, especially World War II era folks. It's very, very difficult to explain to them that under communism, everybody worked. Everybody works. That idea about half the country works, or, you know, 70% of it works and the other half are paying for them, that is a lie, and it has always been a lie. And everyone I've ever had a debate about, you know, the concept of communism, knew absolutely nothing about communism. They've never read the manifesto. They've never read Capital 1, 2, or 3. You dig what I'm saying? They've never read anything. You know, Speech to the Working Men's Party, what was it, 1848. You know, they've never read any of the literature. They've never read Engels. They've never read any of it. But they're all experts on what Marxism and communism is, right? Which they equate with Nazism. Which is utterly ridiculous. You have to be a complete imbecile to believe, like the Tea Party in the United States does, that Nazism and Marxism are somehow compatible. And you know what they do? They take history and they completely twist it because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And what I mean by that is this whole... And George Will has been noted for doing this. And so had a bunch of these other historians you'll see on, like Gerald Posner and what have you. And I'm not trying to call them out. I'm just saying, you know, this is what they talk about. The Soviet Nazi pact, quote unquote, right? It wasn't a pact. They made an agreement, a non-aggression agreement, an 11th hour, by the way, non-aggression agreement, to not, you know, mix it up. You know, that doesn't mean that they liked each other, because Stalin, you know, who really wasn't a communist, believed that. Believed that. You know, I mean, he was, you know, what was it, the five-year plan? You know, I mean, he was pretty good with using capitalism when it suited him. And, you know, the anti-Semitism, or let's really be fair, the Judeophobia that he exhibited, that he injected or re-injected back into Russian society, which is ridiculous being that he was a Georgian, but, you know, he did this. He did this. You know, I mean, it's well known for those of us who know anything at all about communism and Russian history under communism. We know that, you know, after Lenin had his second stroke, he said, look, you know, Trotsky, do not let Stalin get any further in the party. You know, we made a mistake of using him as a thug to get certain things done in the first place. And, you know, Trotsky had to leave the country. And when, you know, that ended up, you know, being his downfall, when he's hanging out with Frida Kahlo and her husband, the famous artist, you know, because there was no way Stalin was going to let him live. And part of his, you know, justification in his own twisted mind for doing what he did to Trotsky, you know, going so far as to go all the way to Mexico to, you know, to have him dealt with, it was so ridiculous. It was simply because he was Jewish. You know, I mean, these hatreds still exist, ladies and gentlemen. And I, you know, and people may think that none of this has anything to do with anything I just said. It does. You know, this woman who was going on her little, you know, quasi-intellectual tear about how Africans are just subhuman. Well, this is the same argument that has been bandied about Jews for how many centuries in Europe. You know, really not a part of the Arab world, which, again, if you look at how history has been twisted, is really not true. They take historical, you know, incidents and completely, you know, misconstrue them. So, you know, okay, so just so I'm clear again, let's go back to this supposed friendship pact between Hitler and Stalin. You know, the people, again, like George Will, who was read in Washington Post, wherever, you know, else he's read, they will say this, and you have, you know, university and college students who hear this, and they forget that Russia lost more of their population in World War II than anybody else. And that, you know, they are not told that despite everything else about Joseph Stalin, he realized that the Nazis were his biggest goddamn problem in, you know, as far as, you know, Western Europe was concerned. you know, anybody who knows anything at all about the history of the Nazi, of the rise to power of the Nazi Party in Germany during the 30s and their little squeaks during the late 20s, was the fact that they went after the left. They went after social democrats, they went after communists, they went after socialists, which again, you can't explain to these Tea Party, you know, Neanderthals, that they're not, it's not the same thing. You know, they went after anyone who did not agree with them, which was everybody on the left, who understood that his pro-business platform, that his pro-banking platform, you know, I mean, it was pro-bank in terms of, you know, using, like, the International Bank of Settlements and Hamas Schacht and his connection with the governor, Montague Norman, of the British banking system. And I can't remember the names of the Americans that were involved in this. But, you know, this was a big scheme and a big scandal. And then you have the De Beers company. The Oppenheimer family, I mean, it's their company, right? I mean, they own it lock, stock, and barrel. I mean, they were supplying diamonds to the Germans during World War II. They were supposed to be British subjects at the time. The American government was trying to prevent the Germans from getting industrial diamonds because at some point they had a, you know, very short supply. And without being able to replenish their munitions, well, it would have given the, you know, the Western alliance, well, you know, I don't know, what do you want to call it? You know, the freedom powers, the democratic powers, the democratic West, right? The allies, okay, you know, whatever. Semantics, whatever. All right, so the capitalist allies, who, okay, they say the moderate capitalist allies as opposed to the, you know, super capitalist Axis alliance, because that's what it was. You know, I mean, Japan, Italy, Spain, Germany, they were all fascists. They were all fascists. You know, Vichy France, we can't leave them out because that wouldn't be fair, would it? And it wouldn't be fair to leave out the Poles either. You know, could we, when they talk about a democratic Poland before World War II, there was no such thing. You know, one of the reasons that Stalin made his agreement, not to justify what his secret police did to the Poles later on, and not to dismiss whatever you want to assume might have happened to General Sikorsky and his daughter and the crew of his plane as it went down, because we really don't know, do we? We really don't know, do we? I mean, we still really don't know what the hell happened with Rudolf Hess in Scotland, do we? You know, Albert Speer always had his questions, right? You know, we really don't know, do we? You know, at this point, we may never know. But what I'm trying to say is, you know, they took that one specific thing. They signed this last-minute non-aggression bid because, you know, basically Stalin is trying to stall for time. He was no pal of Hitler's, had wanted nothing to do with him. Fascism and communism are diametrically opposed. Oil and water cannot mix. In no way, shape, and form can it mix. It just can't. Totalitarianism, I mean, maybe you can find a bridge there to extreme liberalism, you know, neoliberalism. I suppose you can make those bridges, but they're not exactly the same thing. It just isn't. You have to look at them. You have to look at them. And the fact that both, to some degree or another, to one extreme or another, still use class-based systems to run their societies, well, you know, there's no equality there, is, you know, is there? You know, even though both claim equality, you know, and all it is a claim. But what I'm trying to say is, you have the neoconservatives in the United States and Canada who will equate the Obama administration and Barack Obama personally, and just about anybody, if you want to believe, you know, I mean, I don't understand Alan West, you know, and I'm trying to be as respectful as possible, but it's difficult when you're referring to somebody who is going out of his way to outwhite the white men, the most radical white men in the Republican Party. Yeah, I don't understand him. What does he think he's going to get? Didn't he see how they treated Michael Steele?
I mean, Michael Steele put himself out on the limb for them, man, and look at what happened to him. You know, he was a human lawn jockey for them, and they, when they didn't need him anymore, they completely discarded him. And he tries to creep back into the news every now and again, you know, like Newt Gingrich trying to get the NRA's last-minute support by saying we should go to the United Nations, because, you know, he heard that the NAACP would, you know, went to the United Nations over voting. And somebody, I'm sure, who has a computer around him told him that Native Americans would got the United Nations to look at what's happening in the United States, too. And he might have been told by somebody who looks at, you know, Democracy Now, that's on his payroll, that, you know, he's in a hell of a lot of, you know, campaign bills. You know, I don't understand that. You know, big money man, but he can't pay his bills. But, yeah, somebody might have told him that Navi Pillai from the United Nations wants a United Nations investigation of what happened in the Trayvon Martin case and this whole Stand Your Ground law. So, yeah, he came up with his version of go to the UN to defend white man, you know, and white culture and Americanism by demanding that the United Nations recognize that everybody in the world has a God-given right to own a gun. So he took, you know, legitimate grievances that are being taken to the international community, which is what all of this democracy and all of this invasion and occupation and all this stuff is supposed, and all these drones are supposed to be about, to make the argument for more violence. He twisted all of this back to Hitler Stalin. Now, I'm being redundant, but I'm being redundant to be clear. Hitler and Stalin were not allies. Never. If you want to talk about allies in terms of Hitler, you'd have to look at Chamberlain. You know, Priggish Prime Minister for the UK at that time. You want to talk about allies to the Axis powers, coming from the capitalist or moderately capitalist West, you would have to look at Chamberlain. Yeah, Chamberlain's, was it, 18 points?
That, they always called it Munich, right, with big quotes. Do you know what the hell was going on behind that? Well, I mean, if you look at European history, if you can read any European languages, you know, and this is why I suggest studying Esperanto or maybe interlingual, because it would make it easier for you to learn these things. I don't speak most of these things, but I read more than I speak, and I get the gist. And besides, there's translators out there for everything now, so there's really no excuse for ignorance in terms of the international media. We all who have access to computers have access to other opinions. Those who want to block that, well, there's a reason for that, isn't there? Now, it's one thing that if it's really a lie, prove that it's a lie. Now, when it comes again to Hitler and Stalin, if you really look at what's supposed to be Munich, this capitulation to Hitler, it wasn't a capitulation to Hitler. The moneyed elites, the upper classes in the UK, were actually trying to protect the Nazis. They were protecting Vichy. You don't believe me? Understand this. You had, you know, skirmishes within the German government, within the German military, the high command, that wanted to do in Hitler and get rid of him because they realized that he was dangerous. You know, I mean, they wanted to keep the fascism, but they realized that he, as Führer, was a megalomaniac. Now, we all know, because they just done a film about this with Tom Cruise, about, you know, bots against the Führer. We all know this. But here's the thing. They actually approached British intelligence and said, look, help us deal with this. And British intelligence told them to sod off. They received, you know, no assistance from the supposedly anti-Nazi interests outside of Germany. They didn't. You know, the other problem you have to realize is that the Communist Party in Germany and in Austria at that time, and in France and in Belgium and in Luxembourg, was quite strong. It was quite organized. And while they didn't necessarily get along with each other in terms of the socialists not getting along with the anarchists not getting along with the communists not getting along with the orthodox Marxists and such and so on. We saw that in, what, 1937?
You know, in the Spanish Civil War, we saw that. They managed to kind of get their thing together, but, you know, there were disagreements. But they did manage to come up with something that was workable, and it lasted for a couple of years. And what happened? This is how fascist Germany and fascist Italy got their feet wet in trying to take over the rest of the subcontinent. They involved themselves, the Condo Legion, they involved themselves to support the, well, monarchy by extension, but basically Franco, who decided, yeah, I'll go along with this whole fascist thing. They brought him over from Morocco and decided, yeah, sure. And he brings in Moroccan troops, right? He brings in Moroccans. Savage Moroccans, who supposedly were quite savage, actually. And, you know, they ravaged every village, every town that they ran into that was Republican. They got rid of all of them. And I know when I said Republican, it's going to completely flip out people in North America because they have no clue as to what Republican means outside of their own parish. Republican in Ireland and in Spain has nothing to do with what goes on as Republican in this country. Yeah, I know I just confused a bunch of people just there, but let's roll. You know, when they came through, you know, the same thing that kind of happened after World War One in Germany. You know, when the French came in with their occupation forces, while the Versailles Treaty was being worked out, they brought in a lot of cats from Sudan, who, you know, as usual, one thing led to another. So, you know, there was a lot of half-Sudanese Germans running around, and that was actually part of the propaganda by the Nazis to deal with the rise of the Nazi Party. They were pointing out just how many brown Germans there were and what this meant to German survival as a race. Sounds familiar? You know, so because they got involved and forced themselves into World War One, you know, got themselves involved in this whole Balkan adventure, lost, and because they were now, you know, occupied, quote unquote, they took offense to that because, you know, well, it was a race thing, you know, it was purity of the blood, all of this nonsense, you know, the same, you know, crapola that you hear from the Republican right wing in North America, the same thing, the exact same thing. But, you know, you're dealing with people that are so ignorant that it isn't even funny. So, you know, there's just no way to explain to them that they sound exactly like the Nazis that they condemn. But, you know, we're starting to realize they're not really condemning them that much. There's actually going to be a reissue of Mein Kampf. Yeah, they're going to, you know, annotate it with some quote-unquote corrections on where he was wrong. Because it's all wrong. But the point is that, you know, that book has never not been in print. You know, the protocols of the Lost Elders of Zion, you know, the total nonsense rag that far too many black people take as legitimate. I don't understand what it is with you brothers who believe that this thing is real. It is not real. It is false. Why do you hang on to this? I assume you hang on to it because you want to. It doesn't make any sense. Use your brain. Look at this. I mean, it's a literal plagiarism of a morality play. I can't remember the title of the play right now. But, you know, the Okhrana, the Russian secret police under the Tsar, you know, the white Russians. And that's real, what I just said. The white Russians. When you look at Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin, like I said, he was from Georgia and so on, you know, and then you look at the Romanovs, you'll see what I mean. You'll see what I mean. You know, they were trying to push a racial purity thing, and, you know, it's always easy to blame Jews, because Jews in the Western world get blamed for everything, and this attitude came in with the whites. So, you know, the Tsar's secret police, they decided, yeah, you know, we can take a Rasputin every now and again, and we saw what happened to him, and we know who did it to him. The same people who put out the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and we're still dealing with this nonsense, and every Jew in the world still has to live with it. I mean, it's true. It's not an insult to Iran, which, you know, still laughing, you know, ironic laughter. None of this is funny about, you know, I mean, Ahmadinejad. Now, plenty can be said about Ahmadinejad, but he never uttered that wipe Israel off the map thing, and now they've admitted it. So, you know, what else are they lying about? Well, plenty, but I'm just saying, I mean, what else are they lying about? And how many Americans have been quoted as, you know, using this as, you know, anti-Iranian propaganda, anti-Muslim propaganda, anti-Arab propaganda, even though Iranians are not Arabs. Just like French fries are not French. But you can't tell the Republicans down here that, because they don't have French fries anymore in the congressional cafeteria. They have freedom fries. You know, I mean, just, you know, idiocy. Yeah, and then look at the prejudice against France. And then here you have Romney talking up France. You know, which is it? Are you for it or are you against it? Well, we all know Romney is for and against everything, depending on who's paying him at the time. You know, corporations are people, my friend. You know, that's what he said. And his wife loves the fact that there are women out there who don't have a choice and have to go to work while she stays at home. I mean, they've just admitted that when they were in college, they didn't have to work because Romney, Mittens, as a friend of mine calls him, you know, he had enough money in his trust fund that he didn't have to work. But she called that a struggle. So, you know, hey, you know, like I said, you know, things are twisted. They're twisted out of, you know, totally out of shape to fit agendas that don't make any sense. Because if you tried to run them on pure sense, it comes across as complete lunacy. Look at Breivik. You know, the United States, clusterfuck that calls itself the conservative movement, libertarian movement. And yeah, I'm including libertarians because they're Republicans who like to smoke pot, have gay friends, and go to raves. You know, but they're just as racist and bigoted and closed-minded as their Republican counterparts. You know, don't think that there's any difference between them. But it's just because Ron Paul talks about Austrian economics, which is good for Austria, has nothing to do with here. And it's against the war on drugs, like I said, because this way they can have all the freedom to get as high as they want to while calling everybody else a loser. That's all they're about. That's all they're about. You know how many people who are conservative that are on this Ron Paul thing, who shifted from Bush to Ron Paul, right? Because for whatever reason, they didn't like McCain. So they shifted from George W. Bush to Ron Paul. They're all stoners. They're all stoners, and they're college kids, and you know, their parents are paying all of their bills. They're paying their tuition, I suppose. They don't work. They don't. I've never seen them with their books. So it's like, you know, what the hell, man. And on the other hand, I'm looking at my other neighbors, and they get up and they go to work. You know, and they're not using that stuff. You know, I guess they drink their beer, what have you. But you know, but they're also not out there, you know, trying to be self-righteous and pontificating about the Bible and about what's right, and you know, Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, even though Dr. Rifat Hassan, we've linked to this, and we're gonna link to part two, her discussion on feminism and in Islam, which extends to all of the Judeo-Christian Islamic theories, as far as that's concerned, because until you can prove them, it's a theory to me. And it should be to everybody else, because when we look at all this mayhem that's going on in the name of God, how can you have peace or talk peace and have all this violence? But then again, in your books, there's violence. And then you have the Christians to talk about the violence of the Muslims. And then they forget about the violence that's in the Old Testament. And then they forget about the violence that happened to Jesus. And then they forget that who brought the violence. And then who the violence was done to, because they have no historical reference. You know, for people who support colonialism, then talk about Jesus. I have a problem with that. The Romans were a European military force that was occupying that part of Western Asia. And they had a colonialist government that was represented by Pontius Pilate. They had their Lord and Savior crucified. And his people got him out and they got him over to Kashmir. But, you know, the religion says that he died up there. And then he rose from the dead. And then he appeared and ate and then disappeared. Never came back. And then he's going to come back. But I know for a fact that he's buried in Kashmir. Matter of fact, he's buried with a Muslim. Because they're both human beings. You dig what I'm saying? But, you know, now there's all this mayhem that's going on around the world, man. You know, in the name of democracy and peace and women's rights. And now there's more violence that's going to be going on in the name of defending gay people in Africa, when there was never a problem with gay people in Africa, because our brothers and sisters have always accepted our brothers and sisters who are different. Matter of fact, our religion, Vodun, is based on that. But a white man came in with a Bible in one hand, he came in with a pistol in the other, and all of a sudden, our traditional people, who lived life traditional, who looked at life traditionally, who understood the value of life, regardless of what color one's skin is in the original land of the human being, well, you know, before that white man came with the message of Jesus Christ, the way he interpreted it through his European mind, I mean, we never had the problem until he came then. Now there's violence to stop what he started. And a woman sits in a coffee shop and she talks about how savage the African is. Without realizing that whatever savageness we exhibit is what we learned from you. This is the Angry Indian. And you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
A long time ago down in Mississippi, when it was slavery time, they called us niggers, you know. I didn't give a damn how light bright you was a nigger. Right on. So this nigger was working for this white man. The white man said, nigger, so you know you've been working for me a long time. He said, yes, sir, boss. He said, and I hear all you niggers running around here in Mississippi talking about the niggers don't ever get no break. Said, but today, say, I'm gonna give you niggers a break. Said, nigger, I'm gonna put you on TV. I want you to tell the world how we treat the colored folks down here in Mississippi. The nigga said, boss, you sure you want me to tell them? I said, hell yeah, nigga. I said, I'm going to dress you up. Honey, bought him a brand new pair of overalls. Yeah. You know, the kind with the strap on the shoulder. The one strap across the shoulder. I dressed this nigga up and took him down to TV station. It's all right, nigga. Say, you're on the air. I said, you hooked up nationwide. The nigga was scared to go on. I said, boss, you sure it's all right? Say, hell yeah, nigga, go on. Tell them what we do, how we treat you color folks down here in Mississippi. Boss, you sure you want me to tell them? Yeah, nigga, tell them. Speak up, speak up. Nigga say, hell!
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for Intelligent Aboriginal.
Hi, I'm Buffy St. Marie. We have overcome many obstacles in our history as Aboriginal people. We've survived. Today, we must work together, become leaders in the fight to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in our communities. We have to think about the 7 generations ahead of us. It's a matter of survival.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
HIV संक्रमित हरुलाई माया ममता र समाजमा सम्मानित जीवन जिउने वातावरण निर्माण गरौं।
यो उनीहरुको अपेक्षा होइन अधिकार हो।
रोगलाई तिरस्कार र बहिष्कार गरौं, रोगीलाई होइन। HIV अरुलाई मात्र होइन, तपाईलाई पनि लाग्न सक्छ।
सकारात्मक सोच, स्वस्थ समाज अनि सही निर्णय नै सरल तथा सफल जीवन हो।
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास।
Sisters, brothers, friends and supporters. Well, here it is, another year, another birthday. This one makes me 62 years old. Also, this makes it my 30 plus years in prison. I believe it was right after I was illegally convicted in Fargo, North Dakota, when I wrote a statement telling everyone that my freedom would only come after the masses had demanded it. But first, we would have to unite and organize to reach them. So far, we have been unable to do so. Yes, we have reached millions who signed my petitions. We circulated it throughout the world, asking for my release. Through most of those good peoples are from Europe. But we also made a lot of gains here in the United States. At one time, we had 55 members of Congress sign a letter for a new trial or my release. 55 members is historical. No other prisoner in history has ever been able to accomplish this, nor has anyone else, individually. And there are other accomplishments we have made and won here in the United States. Still, I sit in prison, not because I am guilty of the alleged crime I was illegally convicted of, but because we are still unable to reach the masses here in America. The reasons for this is not because the American peoples do not care or want to help, but because we have been unable to reach them. Personally, I believe the majority of them do care and want to help. We sense this from the ones we are able to reach. We are moving forward very slowly in this freedom campaign of mine. The reason for this is we just do not have the financial resources to move forward at the pace we would like to be. This is the real and only reason we have been unable to reach the peoples of the United States. Nothing is free here in America. Not justice or the media. So although there still is no light at the end of the tunnel for me or my freedom, we continue struggling forward. I continue to search for the hope and strength I need to survive. I continue to pray, hope that one day I will get the support I need from the American people. And one day I will still be able to walk out of prison. So my hopes and spirits are still high at my 62 years of age. I can tell you in this continued struggle, we are still finding sufficient pieces of new evidence to file new appeals on. Those of you who have followed my case closely, I can imagine, are thinking, how can this be, as there has been so many constitutional violations already? But the same old problem exists. The courts continue to cover up the criminal acts in my conviction committed by my prosecutors. Your help is still needed more than ever. Please give us all you can. Thank you. No shot in the spirit of Crazy Horse. Tom J. Week, more of you last. Leonard Peltier.
Pues aquí le mando la aventura Radio Bemba a toda la familia ahí que estamos en Europa. Estamos en Cuarto, Arizona, y con vosotros la fuente para todo lo que
sea. Mi vida va prohibida.
Radio Bemba, Manuchado, pues sí, con vosotros siempre.
Solo voy con...
This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
I'm Asada Shakur. The first time I heard a tape of one of Mamiya's radio broadcasts, it was the first time I fully understood why the United States government was so intent on putting him to death. I make a special appeal to you, sisters and brothers, to fight tooth and nail to save Mamiya's life and to free him from the grips of his oppressors. As you honor our forefathers and foremothers, I urge you to honor our living heroes. When you honor the names of Nat Turner, Harriet Tubman, and Malcolm X, I urge you to honor the names of Geronimo Gijaga, Sundiata Okoli, Mutulu Shakur, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. I urge you not to forget and not to betray our living heroes. If we ignore their struggle, we are ignoring our own. If we betray our living history, then we are betraying ourselves. We could not save Malcolm X, but we can save Mamiya. We can save him, and we must save him. Because we love our brother, and we need our brother to help us fight for freedom. Free Mamiya Abu-Jamal, free all political prisoners. Let us carry on our tradition to freedom.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Reformation with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
This is Kristen Hirsch from Throwing Muses, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license.
Okay, on to our next story. And more Britons are facing questions over links to the Utøya killer, Anders Breivik. This is the Norway killer story. The names have emerged from interviews with Breivik and English anti-Muslim blogger Paul Ray, say the Norwegian police. This is in The Guardian. The Norwegian police are saying they are to question several British citizens in their search for the potential accomplices of the mass killer Anders Breivik. And officers in Oslo said the names of individuals in several far-right groups emerged from questioning of British anti-Muslim blogger Paul Ray, as well as further interviews with Breivik. Apparently, Breivik wrote that he attended the founding meeting of the Knights Templar European Military Order in London in 2002, where he met a mentor who used the pseudonym Richard after Richard the Lionheart. He signed the 1,500-page document with an anglicised version of his name and datelined it London 2011. Breivik also repeatedly praised the English Defence League, saying he had 600 EDL supporters as Facebook friends and had spoken with members and leaders. EDL has condemned the killings and has denied any official contact with Breivik, insisting it is a peaceful, non-racist organisation opposed to extremism. Now, Steve, you on this first. Are you worried that the Norwegian police are over here going around interviewing far-right in Britain?
No, I'm actually quite encouraged by it. I mean, if they found that there is a link with this killer, then, you know, I think we ought to cooperate.
Because originally we were told he was just doing this on his own and there was no connection, but it's clearly come out in the last couple of weeks through what the Norwegian police have been saying, that there were connections here in Britain.
Yeah, there were, by the sound of it. And, you know, I think we do need to get to the bottom of those. I mean, there is a... Across Europe, there are a group of these fanatical people who have this worldview that they're on some sort of crusade to preserve Christianity against the caliphate and all the rest of it. And I think we do need to expose these. You have, you know, they're similar to what we had with Timothy McVeigh in America 15 years ago. And we do need to get to the bottom of this, and we do need to ensure that if there are links, then people are exposed, clearly.
Martin, this anti-Muslim blogger Paul Ray apparently was interviewed last week after claims he may have been the mentor mentioned by Breivik in his manifesto posted online shortly before he carried out the killings on the 22nd of July.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when an incident like this happens, the first thing that... obviously, Bond's horrified. It was clearly a political incident. Most of the people killed were young Labour Party activists on their summer camp, so there's a very definite political dimension to this. I mean, Norway is a very well-managed country, in my view. The Labour Party have run it very successfully for the last 50 years. Their economy is in better shape than ours, although we're all in the same mess. But at the same time, these people are really dangerous, and there's got to be a question of what the linkages are. The far right in Italy in the 1970s and 1980s, they bombed Bologna railway station, they killed 80-odd people. They were being orchestrated by the Western intelligence services, by NATO intelligence. It's all in Daniel Ganser's book. He's an academic from Switzerland, NATO secret armies. Now, the first thing that crosses my mind with an incident like this, is there more to it than just an individual? Is there a network of far-right extremists? And behind that... Are the intelligence services implicated? I'm not saying they are, but it's a perfectly reasonable question to ask. The Brabant massacres in the 1980s in Belgium, again, Belgian parliamentary inquiry uncovered that their own security services, including the British security services, were involved. Now, this is all part of the Gladio network. The assassination of Olaf Palme in Sweden was also
so
potentially...
He was the
Prime Minister of Sweden and he was assassinated, and the suspicion that again was NATO intelligence because they didn't like Palme's international politics. Now, I'm not saying that this is definitely what's happening here, but that's one of the questions that arises in my mind, and I hope the Norwegian police will follow the trail wherever it leads and arrest whoever they need to arrest.
I mean, the difficulty with the Gladio networks, I mean, they were also known as... Gladio was the Italian version. They were known as stay-behind networks. Yeah. The idea was that if communism took over liberal democracies, then a group of people would form a terrorist war behind them. Now, the difficulty is once you sort of arm people and train them, you're never too sure where they're going to go with that after the event. And certainly, there's implications behind the Bologna train bombing in 1980. There was definite links between Fiore, who did that, who spent some time over in the UK, and he had links with the British far right. Equally in Turkey, it's quite interesting now because you've got the Ergenekon trials with the army and implications. So yeah, I mean this does go deeply, and it may come out that someone's got an each-way bet on some of these organisations, but certainly, you know, as we've seen, the terrible attack on civilians. I mean, one thing about Norway, just as a bit of an aside, but I think it's interesting given that Martin is an economist. I mean, one thing I do admire the Norwegians for is that whether they've had Labour governments or right-of-centre governments, with North Sea Oil, they've established a principle that this is an investment fund for future generations of the country, and they very much did that as a separate entity. And I was talking to somebody from Denmark a couple of days ago. Denmark didn't do it, neither did the UK. Mm-hmm. And Norway's quite unique in that they did actually look at this as an investment for the future. Dubai has to a to some extent as well, but they've gone down the consumerist road. And I think long term, actually, Norway's probably going to be a success.
Well, I mean, one of the interesting things about the Norwegian approach to North Sea oil is, A, they had a state-run oil industry, which took them longer to get off the ground because they didn't know anything about it, so they had to train themselves up. But, of course, because they had political stability, there was no rush to get oil on stream quickly to make a political... I mean, basically, the Labour Party decided to bring in the American oil majors because they wanted to bring it on stream quickly to bribe the electorate in 1979. Mm. And, of course, in Norway, that's not an issue because there's a stable setup and people just think, well, we've got this oil there, we're only going to take it out once, so let's take our time. The other thing about their sovereign wealth fund is they're not allowed to invest inside Norway because in that way you avoid what's called the Dutch disease, where your currency appreciates because you become an oil currency. And what happens then is you get a lot of money from the oil, but your manufacturing industry is priced out of international markets. So the sovereign wealth fund in Norway cannot invest inside Norway, it has to invest abroad. So in this way, it protects the currency from being overvalued. Now, this is all very smart stuff. And when I look at the mismanagement of the British economy over the last 30 years, it makes me want to tear my hair out in despair, if I had any. And you can't see that I haven't out there in Radio Land, but I know.
Now, also this week on the Today programme, John Humphreys, a presenter there, pinned down a guy called Tommy Robinson, who's one of the leaders and founders of the English Defence League here in Britain, as part of their 10th anniversary of the September 11th attack. So let's have a listen to that.
Set up and run by a Luton businessman, Tommy Robinson, the EDL has been remarkably successful in a very short time at getting people around the country to come out onto the streets to protest against what they see as a growing threat from Islam.
30 years ago in this town, there was 3,000 Muslims and one mosque. If you'd have said to people 30 years ago, in 30 years' time, there'll be 19 mosques, there'll be 30, 40, 50,000 Muslims, they'll be banning the Emblem of St George in your school, they'll be opening a prayer centre in the Arndale Centre, they'll be attacking your troops when they're walking home, they'll have stalls set up promoting jihad and extremism every single week in the town. 30 years ago, people would have said, never, that's not going to happen in Luton. Well, it's happened. At the end of the day, Islamic demographics are terrifying. The birth rate and the statistics are terrifying.
So are you just racists?
I'm not racist. At all. I completely hate racism. We've defeated Nazism, but yet we're allowing Islamism to flourish because it goes under a banner of religion.
But aren't you promoting hatred against them?
We don't do anything out of hate, we do it out of love. Love for Christianity, love for our culture, love for my kids' futures.
At the heart of this conflict is obviously fear. But is it fear of Islamic terrorism, another 9/11, or is it something else? Robinson says what his organisation fears is Sharia law.
Now, in 2003, the European Court of Human Rights outlawed Sharia law in Europe and said it's incompatible with Western democracy due to their views on homosexuals, their views on women and their views on infidels. That's all of us. It's incompatible. Won't work. And all we're seeing now is a louder voice and a louder call for Sharia law and aspects of Sharia law to be implemented into the British legal system.
Social fabrics of this society, even the economic, political, are collapsing. And this is where people like myself come along and we present this alternative, which I believe is Islam.
That's exactly what the English Defence League fears, or maybe we should call it the Englishness Defence League.
That was John Humphreys on the Today programme earlier this week. Now, first of all, Steve, you on this. I mean, what he's doing there, and I was quite surprised that Humphreys didn't question him on where he was saying that, oh, well, we love them and we're Christians. What do you think of what are the English Defence League and how is it, do you think, that they can get away with saying, oh, we are just Christians, whereas it seems that they're more like these kind of Knights Templar Crusaders rather than actually embracing the teachings of Christ?
Yes, I think you should have asked him which church he attended and when he last went, actually. That might have been interesting, because I very much doubt if the answer would have been the previous Sunday. I think there is an issue with alternative laws, and I'm hoping at my party conference towards the end of the month there's a fringe meeting by a campaign group called One Law for All. I mean, I am a secularist. I don't believe that religion should play any part in the state, and that we should have one law for all, which is the secular law. Having said that, there are occasions where internal disputes between individuals can be settled by other means, and we've had examples that have run successfully. There's a Jewish court to do with food measures, I think the Beth Din or something, and that seems to work. There is the halal rules on slaughter, and it's made clear that, you know, this is halal meat as opposed to non-halal, and I don't have too much of a problem with that. You know what you're getting, you can make your individual choice, but I do think a lot of it does appear to be cultural racism. I don't think it's Islam as a religion that they don't like. I think it's the people who practice the Islamic religion who predominantly are of brown complexion. And I think that appears to be the motivation for this. I hadn't even heard of the EDL until about 3 or 4 years ago. I was at a football match in Cardiff and saw somebody with English Defence League on his T-shirt. Didn't know what it was, looked it up on Google, and it's clear they... I think it's designed to bring into right-wing activity people who are not necessarily political, but, you know, have some unease about what's happening. And it, you know, obviously there are links with people like the BNP, but it's seen as it pervades this apolitical image, where clearly it isn't. It's part of the far right.
Martin, do you think this English Defence League, as Steve's saying there, is relatively recent? It's got echoes of other groups which have disbanded from years gone by?
Well, yes. I mean, if you think when the English Defence League started in Luton, if you remember, the incident began with the Royal Anglian Regiment marching through Luton, getting the freedom of the city, and a small number of jihadists held up signs saying, you know, go to hell, British soldiers, we want you killed, blah, blah, blah. And then the English Defence League that were then formed in response to that. Now, what I suspect, or fear, is that both the English Defence League and groups like Al-Majah Haroon are glove puppets for the creation of social chaos. We saw this in Italy, we were talking about Gladio earlier, we saw this in Italy in the 1970s and 1980s, and as Philip Whitehead, I think, was the journalist, who said, well, the right-wing terrorists were glove puppets and the left-wing terrorists were marionettes. But both sets of terrorists, the Red Brigades and the fascists, Nuclei Armati Proletari, Prima Linea, they were all being manipulated by the intelligence services to create chaos. And in Turkey, that was exactly the same process. So you had right-wing and left-wing terrorists tearing the place apart, and then the army takes over in 1980 in Turkey and says, oh, we've put a stop to all of that. Well, that's easy to do because they were organising it all, and that's what's being uncovered in these trials. Now, have we got, I just put it as a question, have we got in Britain Al-Majah Haroon and the EDL are our version of this game, strategy of tension? And Al-Majah Haroon, of course, and all these other groups, these extremist Muslim groups, which are not in any way representative of the Muslim community at large. Melanie Phillips, the journalist in the Daily Mail, has written a book called Londonistan, and she waxes indignant about the number of jihadis in London. Well, there's a simple reason for that, Melanie. It's because MI6 was the lead agency in Operation Cyclone in the 1980s, where we smashed the Russians out of Afghanistan by using an Islamic International Brigade, now known as Al-Qaeda. And who set that up? MI6. And that's why Al-Majah Haroon and all these, Captain Hook and all the rest of them, are in London, because they were invited here by our own intelligence services.
See, I wonder whether there's an element of badge engineering about this. A few years ago, there was an organisation called Combat 18,
yeah,
that used to door bomb wars.
HH. 18 is 1H. Heil Hitler, isn't it?
That's right, because, yeah, AH was the first and eighth letter of the alphabet. And they appeared for a while. Now, there were allegations, and, you know, this caused a lot of hand-wringing, as did the EDL. Now, there were allegations that Combat 18 was actually a honey trap that was set up by the security services in order to attract the sorts of people that would engage in right-wing terrorism and so on, to identify them so that security services knew where they are. So, for instance, David Copeland, the nail bomber, was picked up. Now, it appeared to have been picked up comparatively easily, and you wonder whether, you know, that was because he was C-18 or some similar organisation, and the state knew his name and address.
Yeah.
What's the purpose of this kind of activity then, Martin?
Well, in Italy in the 70s, they called it the anni di piombo, the years of lead, or the strategia di tensione, strategy of tension. Basically, the Communist Party in Italy, the PCI, was very strong, and they set fair to win several elections in post-war Italy. But every time they came near to winning an election, suddenly all of this terrorism would break out. And Bologna, of course, was bombed because it was a communist voting city. Most of those people who died were communist voters because it was in Bologna. And in Turkey, it was basically the army
And don't forget that Turkey is well integrated into NATO. Turkish military officers are trained at Sandhurst. They are part of NATO. So the Turkish army was involved in fomenting both right and left-wing terrorism in the country in order to seize power and prevent various social reforms from being carried through and so forth. Now, this, in fact, is standard NATO modus operandi. It's not something that we... this isn't conspiracy theory. This is all historically documented fact. Parliamentary inquiries in Belgium, Switzerland and Italy have all uncovered this. Basically, the perpetrators, the senior intelligence people concerned, have never been punished. And if you ask me why we've got problems now in the world, it's because those people have never been brought to book, and they need to be.
One of the ironies of that period to me is that certainly by the mid-1970s, the Italian Communist Party had more or less become a pretty moderate social democratic party under Berlinguer, who'd broken with Moscow publicly. And one of the things I find strange is that actually at that time in the Cold War, if you'd really wanted to bring the Cold War to an earlier end, then probably the way to have done it would have been if the Italian Communist Party had come to power in Italy. It couldn't have done so alone. It would have probably been with radicals and Republicans and others in a coalition government. But, odd logic.
Odd logic, but I mean, don't forget that the powers that be have got their own agenda, which is to do with resources, imperialism and all the rest of it. So they can't accept what to you and I would be a quite logical evolution of Western politics. Not in their book.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And the Democrats are throwing the election away. For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman that was running for president. I'm no second-class citizen. And goddamn the Democrat.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You have been listening to Angrindian Radio, angrindianradio.blogspot.com.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.